What happens when someone who deliberately avoids celebrity becomes one of the most influential religious voices of our time? Timothy Keller walked out his door each day knowing the first 10,000 people he passed wouldn't recognize him. Yet this unassuming pastor, who turned away Jane Pauley and Robin Williams when they attended his church, would reshape how millions think about faith. Named to Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People, with books translated into over 25 languages, Keller built something rare, a bridge between ancient Christianity and modern doubt that skeptics actually wanted to cross. He didn't water down faith for secular audiences or retreat into religious tribalism. Instead, he offered a third way, intellectually rigorous yet spiritually warm, deeply rooted yet culturally engaged. His story reveals how one person's willingness to wrestle honestly with hard questions created space for countless others to do the same. Born in 1950, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Timothy Keller embodied cultural collision. His German Lutheran father and Italian Catholic mother created a mixed heritage that foreshadowed Tim's gift for connecting different worlds. His mother Louise's controlling nature meant young Tim endured weeks where she'd teach Tim who's boss. He developed sharp verbal skills defending himself against bullies and his demanding mother, but remained socially awkward despite gifted classes. He retreated into books, building the intellectual foundation for his life's work. His religious upbringing proved equally complicated. Baptized Catholic, confirmed Lutheran, then attending an evangelical congregational church, Tim absorbed contradictory versions of Christianity. Combined with his mother's perfectionism, this created what he later called a pathologically over-scrupulous conscience. At Bucknell University in 1968, he studied world religions seeking a faith without eternal judgment. His comparative study led him back to Christianity's unique claim, a personal, loving God who pursues relationship with broken people. In January 1970, during sophomore year, something shifted. Tim stopped judging God and surrendered to the God who is just and at the same time justifies sinners. Friends witnessed remarkable transformation. He became kinder, emotionally present, genuinely interested in others. The Bible, once critically analyzed, now began analyzing him instead. This wasn't about adopting new beliefs. It was about encountering a person. Tim expanded InterVarsity Christian Fellowship from 15 to over 100 members. Barbara Boyd, a staff member, revolutionized his approach to Scripture through her lordship talk. Just as you cannot accept Barbara while rejecting Boyd, you cannot embrace the loving Jesus while rejecting the holy Jesus. Her intensive Bible study method, finding 50 observations in a single verse within 30 minutes, became foundational to Tim's ministry. Then came Kathy Christie, brilliant, direct, and his intellectual equal. At 12, she'd corresponded with C.S. Lewis. Their relationship deepened through shared passion for Lewis, prayer, and theology. After Tim's previous relationship ended, Kathy delivered her famous Pearls Before Swine speech, declaring she couldn't bear remaining just friends. They married January 4, 1975, a union of two brilliant minds equally committed to wrestling with faith's deepest questions. C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien profoundly shaped Tim Keller's intellectual formation. Having read virtually everything Lewis wrote, Keller developed an intuitive grasp of clear thinking and vivid apologetics. Tolkien provided a heart language for discussing work, hope, and redemptive stories. 5 years after 9/11, Keller spoke at a memorial service attended by President Bush, drawing on Tolkien's Sam Gamgee. Is everything sad going to come untrue? Keller affirmed that through Christ's resurrection, everything sad will indeed come untrue. At Gordon Conwell Seminary starting in 1972, Richard Lovelace's pneumodynamics course transformed Keller's ministry philosophy. Lovelace taught that revival occurs when Christians properly understand justification and sanctification's relationship. Many unknowingly live by works righteousness, drawing assurance from performance rather than Christ's finished work. Through Loveless, Keller discovered Jonathan Edwards, whose true virtue versus common virtue concept particularly influenced him. While common virtues like family love breed rivalry, true virtue emerges when God becomes our ultimate good, enabling universal love. Edwards' distinction between intellectual understanding and heart-level affections became central to Keller's preaching. There's a difference between having an opinion that honey is sweet and actually tasting its sweetness. After graduating in 1975, the Kellers moved to Hopewell, Virginia, the chemical capital of the South, where Tim pastored a predominantly older, blue-collar congregation. This setting taught him to make preaching concrete and practical, his first lesson in contextualization. Across 9 years and over 1,500 sermons, he learned that effective preaching requires answering real questions and connecting with people's actual problems. When the Kellers later returned, members recalled his personal counseling rather than his sermons, demonstrating that people only cared what he said from the pulpit to the degree they knew he cared about them personally. What drew Keller to Philadelphia was replacing Edmund Clowney, his only personal mentor, as a preaching professor. Clowney's Christ-centered preaching taught that the Bible's fundamental question is whether it's about us or about Jesus. Is David and Goliath about being like David or about Jesus, who took on the only giants that can really kill us? Keller's most beloved message appears in his 2008 bestseller, The Prodigal God, dedicated to Clowney. The parable of Luke 15 targets the Pharisees represented by the elder brother who doesn't understand the father's mercy. Hearing this interpretation in 1973, Keller felt he had discovered the secret heart of Christianity. In Philadelphia from 1984 to 1989, Harvey Kahn taught that no culture, including Western, has privileged status. Every culture has idols, and none can introduce the gospel without explicit divine revelation of Christ. Jack Miller taught Keller how the church needs revival and revival needs the church, and most importantly, how to preach grace from every biblical text. When Tim Keller first spoke at DeMoss House in New York City, he captivated young professionals with Scripture's narrative from garden to city, affirming God's love for urban centers. These 40 Christians formed Redeemer's backbone, with 7 serving on crew staff. Their extensive networks of non-Christian friends helped explain why within 3 years, half of Redeemer's attendees had no previous church connection. Kathy Keller initially resisted moving to New York, concerned about raising their 3 boys in the city. During communion at their Philadelphia church, she wrestled with God and ultimately concluded, "I guess we're going." The early years were marked by extraordinary prayer, with young professionals gathering at 7 a.m. for meetings participants remember with profound spiritual warmth. In less than 30 months, Redeemer grew from 0 to 1,000 attendees. Early members described this period as genuine revival. When we spun out of Redeemer into the world, there was an ache at our heart, like we had left Narnia or Camelot. On September 11, 2001, Redeemer's attendance swelled from 2,800 to 5,400 the following Sunday. Keller preached on Lazarus's resurrection, offering hope without explaining why God allowed the tragedy. Drawing on how early Christians stayed to care for the sick during Roman plagues while pagans fled, Redeemer encouraged New Yorkers not to abandon their city. This sacrificial commitment helped evangelical church attendance in New York City triple from 1% to 3% in the following decade. Timothy Keller synthesized diverse thinkers without becoming a clone of any. From John Stott's preaching to Hermann Bavinck's worldview, Jane Jacobs' urbanism to Kierkegaard's existentialism, he incorporated insights wherever he found them. At Redeemer, he wove these threads into a church both intellectual and pious, reformed but not sectarian. Even while battling pancreatic cancer, Tim emphasized his struggle for deeper grace. "I'm not fighting my cancer, I'm fighting my sin," he told his biographer. Diagnosed in May 2020, he and Kathy returned to basics, reading voraciously and deepening their prayer life as his faith prepared to become sight. Keller's legacy lives through Redeemer Presbyterian Church, the Gospel Coalition, and Redeemer City to City, which has planted 748 churches in over 75 cities, along with his books and sermons. His approach offers a third way beyond partisan lines, presenting the gospel as an alternative to both secular intolerance and religious tribalism. He proved intellectual rigor and spiritual warmth aren't opposites, but partners, pursuing depth over visibility, synthesis over simplicity, grace over certainty. His life whispers a challenge. What if the most influential voices care least about being heard and most about being faithful?